And it's time for another Movie Mastery in Theaters Now. I am your host, John, over there, my co-host, Jeff.
Oh, man. Am I getting downgraded?
Yeah.
Okay.
Next episode, you're going to be also someone else.
I accept this. This feels right.
Yeah. Eventually, it'll just be, and my pet, Jeff.
I'll just be the guy who does the commercials at the beginning and end. You're going to make me be your, like, Don Pardo?
Yeah, there we go.
Musical guest, John!
And your host, John!
It's just all John.
It's just all John! It's all we could get!
Musical guest, John, featuring Flea!
He's real dirty! There's fleas on him!
No, it's the Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. He'll do it. It doesn't matter.
He was in town.
He's always in town.
So we went and saw a movie that you guys technically voted on. God, January was a garbage month so much
fuck
that
you,
we're bringing
January.
You to this in February.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the movie came out towards the end of the month, so we just fit it into the schedule the best we could, and we're just going to push forward into February with open eyes and clear hearts and really hope that...
Yeah, with clear eyes, full hearts, and then we can't lose.
Well, we're going to get more votes for February because January had nothing in it.
Oh, God. I mean, the other contender, which was like, I think actually one vote behind, was Paddington 2.
Which I've heard is a really good movie.
I have heard it's very nice.
Yeah.
And also, it is a movie about racial stereotyping and profiling.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't see that.
I think it's also like the last movie that is forced to have Weinstein logo, like logos and stuff on it.
Aw.
Because it was made by that company. And then they tried there desperately to shop it around and eventually buried it in a January release.
There you go.
Is what so that's why it's there anyway. But anyway, what we saw was
The Death Cure, the third movie of the Maze Runner trilogy.
I love our trend of seeing the third movie in trilogies, of which we have not seen the first two movies.
Oh, yeah. Well, seeing weird sequels without having any context is amazing because it gets me to pay attention to a movie I otherwise wouldn't care about because I am attempting to piece together what happened in the previous movies.
I mean, this is the third one of these, I think. I'm pretty sure it's the third one we've had to do, where we've had to watch XXX, Rise of Xander Cage, Return of Xander Cage, I don't know.
Yes, the Rise of the Return of Xander Cage.
The Retirement of Xander Cage, I hope. And then also Bridget Jones's Baby.
Yeah, well, we've also had to see 50 Shades Darker.
So that makes four, because I can think of at least one more.
And then we also had to see Fast and Furious.
Yeah, Fast and Furious. Well, that was Fast and Furious 8 or whatever.
Yeah, but I'm saying not the third ones, just we've seen a lot of sequels without having seen anything else.
Yeah, so that's just sort of a fun trend for us. But good Lord, John, have you seen any of the Maze Runner movies?
Oh, no, I haven't. And the weird thing to me is I don't remember anything as far as like trailers or anything like that for the second movie. I very distinctly remember the push for the first movie, and I thought it looked pretty cool. I was like, oh, it's a weird, like, you wake up somewhere and there's a giant maze and, like, you have to get through it. That's a fun, strange mystery box adventure.
It's like Cube, but with a big budget.
Yeah. I was like, oh, it's young adult Cube. Neat.
Okay. I would be able to deal with that. And I knew Littlefinger was in it.
I didn't know anything. All I knew from the first movie was this is a weird young adult Cube.
But you're not into Game of Thrones anyway, so Aidan Gillen probably doesn't have a whole lot of draw for you.
No, I mean, as soon as he showed up in this movie, I was like, fuck, that's Littlefinger. I don't know what your name is. All I know you as is Littlefinger, and I don't even watch that shit.
He's in this movie as evil super agent Tech Jansen. I'm sorry, they just call him Jansen, but I'm assuming his first name is Tech.
You have to assume that, yes.
Yeah, I think it's...
You
it's,
have to.
It's unspoken, but yeah.
But then there was apparently a second movie, and I have no idea what the fuck that was.
And I had no idea what any of these were about. In fact, I knew so little about these that I kind of thought we were seeing the third Divergent series movie. I was like, oh boy, this is going to be some movie about how a bunch of kids learn to see color when the other kids can't see color, and it's how you can tell that they're special, and also they all have salon-quality haircuts all the time.
Oh, yeah, obviously. But the third movie, I then saw, like, the trailer for, at least,
mm-hmm.
And I went, where is the point A to point B of giant weird maze that we have to get through to we're now basically the Hunger Games? themes?
It is very confusing to watch just this movie. There's little references to the previous two that it just don't mean anything. And honestly, I think that the best thing, because this movie, I'm going to go ahead, I'll say it now, I'll be out and clear. This is not a terrible film. It's watchable. It's the kind of movie you could watch on a Saturday morning when you're doing your laundry and be like, yeah, I'm all right with this.
Yeah, I mean, it's watchable. Yeah. And I get, it's definitely one that I feel like if you'd already invested in the first two, then sure, go ahead and see this one. There's enough explosions and dumb shit that you could even see it in theaters and not feel terrible.
There's cool twisty, turny action set pieces in this that go on longer than you'd expect, and it's sort of fun to watch them. I have very few complaints, so my basically...
Honestly, the budget for this was way higher than I thought it would be.
That's true. So ultimately, what I'm thinking is the best thing that we could possibly do in this episode is try to solve for X and Y based only on knowledge of Z.
I mean, we're going to come back after the music and give you the full spoiler of it, but man, just going into it, you got to think, we say it's okay? Like,
it's
just
fine.
Spoiler-free review is, it's fine. There's enough action and nonsense that even though we had not seen the other movies, we were like, all right, I can watch this.
I actually think I probably liked it better for not having seen the other ones. But I really want to
kind
of...
But I also didn't come out of it going, I need to go watch those other movies now.
No, I feel better for having not seen them, because at this point, I have a headcanon for what the heck happened before this movie, which is crazy. And I'm happier that way.
All right, so we are going to give you some music. We will be back with the full spoiler review of The Maze Runner, The Death Cure.
I try to laugh about it, cover it all up with lies. I try to laugh about it, hiding the tears in my eyes. Cause boys, don't cry.
We are back. Let's get into The Death Cure.
So we get a great first scene where everyone says everyone else's name so that you'll know it. And that's how we meet Thomas and Vince and Brenda.
Just everyone over the radio. Hey, this is Brenda, the character Brenda.
And it's notable that everyone in this movie either has a very, very boring normal name like Thomas or Teresa, or an insane name like Frypan.
Well, we get Minho and Frypan and who are the other? Galley?
Galley, Thomas, Newt. And...
Oh, I guess if you, that would be the first spoiler, is Galley's in this.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Other movies.
Sorry, folks who I guess only saw episodes 1 and 2. Spoiler alert, Galley returns. We don't know when he was removed from the previous films.
Oh, yeah, well, originally this movie was called The Rise of Galley.
So that's Will Poulter as Galley. We aren't going to see him for quite a while in the film.
No.
Will Poulter's been in a bunch of stuff, like Son of Rambo, and I can't remember the name of that movie, but the one where like the family goes on a wacky adventure in a
the somethings, like the Thompsons or whatever.
Yeah, We're the Millers, I think.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but it looks like they removed him from the first movie because they didn't realize what puberty was going to do to him. Because I'll just say, spoiler alert: Galley looks like Sid from Toy Story.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
like he looks like the bully from Toy Story. Exactly,
he is 100% Sid the whole way. If they made a live action Toy Story right now, they would need him.
Yeah, they would be unable to work with. He already kind of looks CGI. There's kind of an uncanny valley thing about him. And you're like, how come that guy isn't trying to light a toy on fire? What's going on with this movie?
Well, it's because he learned his lesson and now he's a garbage man.
That's true. Well, he looks like Sid from Toy Story, not Sid from Toy Story 3. I'm not giving him that credit.
So, the movie starts out with a train heist where our main characters are trying to get back someone that I assume got captured at the end of the second movie,
which is
Minho.
Minho, who's a friend of the main character, folks. So we open on Brenda, and Brenda is Battle Angel Alita.
Yeah.
But she's hanging around with Giancarlo Esposito, and I cannot remember what his character's name was.
Something...
Hermano?
Well, that's what he kept calling everyone.
He calls everyone Jorge. Hermano.
He's Jorge.
Jorge, great. So the two of them are in a cool battle jeep.
Yep.
And they are getting ready to do a cool thing. And they go driving across the blasted wasteland of Southern California. It kind of looks like they're driving past, like, maybe Camp Pendleton or something. But
I mean, I definitely think this is the five once you leave L.A.
Yeah, it's got that feel of being the zone between like South Los Angeles and San Diego.
It feels like in between LA? Like the 5-hour drive between like L.A. and the Bay Area.
Oh,
where there is fuck all.
Because there's beach in almost every shot, they would have to at least be going up the one.
Well, I mean, I also don't think this is supposed to be California.
It is so clearly Southern California.
But it is so very California.
It is from every little detail, from the mountains to the types of grass that's growing, it is very clearly Southern California.
Yeah.
Either that or once society collapsed, Southern California just sort of spread itself out like a big virus.
Yeah, man. Society collapsed and it just yawned and spread itself out.
Ah, you know what the rest of the world needs to be? Coastal scrublands. Let's get some chaparral all over everything.
There you go. I got some of that for you and some of that for you.
Anyway, they're driving around in very cleared scrublands near Southern California, and they pull up on a big ridge, and they're like, they're late. We have to go anyway. And then they convert their car to battle mode and go chasing after a train.
Yeah. So the whole train heist thing is, it's neat for an opening scene.
It's cool. It's a fun opening scene, and it does a great job of introducing all the characters by name.
Oh, yeah. Well, it gives you a good way to be like, okay, that's this person, that's this person, they're still here.
Yeah.
But it also is like, let's have a cool action thing to do this with. And it works.
It's fine. Yeah. Eventually, Vince and Thomas, our main character Thomas, and Vince, who is way too old to be hanging around with Thomas.
Well, yeah. Well, Vince seems like he's, again, because I haven't seen the other ones, he seems like he's supposed to be the, like, either father figure or the, like, gruff commander guy.
Well, let's just say his aesthetic is dumpster Jedi.
Yeah. Let's just say he is, I was going to say post-apocalyptic Burning Man guy, but all people who go to Burning Man basically look that way anyway.
So yeah, he's dumpster Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
He's played by Barry Pepper, who you'd remember is the main character of Battlefield Earth. Oh, no, wait, you wouldn't remember that. Why would anyone remember that?
I mean, I remember that. And also Pepperidge Farm remembers that.
I have a hard time even identifying him if the movie's not shot in a series of incongruous Dutch angles.
Man, unless it's slow motion, I don't know who this guy is.
Unless John Travolta is desperately trying to stuff a rat down his mouth, I can't recognize Barry Pepper.
Which is weird, because there is a scene where John Travolta shoves a rat down his mouth in this movie. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, Barry Pepper.
Oh yeah, there he is. Those man animals do enjoy fine rats. How have we evaded Battlefield Earth this long?
I mean, I think it's because we've both seen it.
Yeah, that's part of it. Grant, I could probably do a full review of it without having seen it in years, because it's very memorable.
God, I have not watched that in like 16 years now.
Yeah.
So my memory of it would be very, very shoddy.
Anyway, Brenda and Jorge distract the train drivers the conductors.
Well, they're just there to distract the help that comes, which is a giant airship.
Yeah,
they have only one.
Yeah, big old. Well, I mean, come on, it's the post-apocalypse. How many super V-22s do you think they're gonna have?
Apparently one, because it's the only one we see in the entire movie.
Anyway, they distract the train, and then eventually this sort of super version of a V-22 that pops up and it goes riding off, while Thomas and Vince do a cool train heist where they jump off a jeep and onto the train and fight dudes.
Yeah, it is a fun scene, and they are there to save their buddy, and there's a train car of children headed somewhere.
Yes. So basically, they manage to separate the two cars of the train that have people on them, and then this is probably the biggest plot hole in this scene, is the train comes skidding to a halt in the middle of fucking nowhere, and then Thomas just gets off the train and yells, and a bunch of his friends emerge from the bushes.
Yes. The train stops, and right where it stops in the middle of nowhere, everyone that he had that was like, oh yeah, you guys are going to be here to help us, I guess, open up the locks on this train car so we can lift it away, you're going to show up. But they were right where it stopped?
They were exactly where it stopped. It was like there was no point where they were like, we have to pull the train over now or we're going to miss Newt and Frypan.
Yeah, they're not like, oh, we've got 4 seconds left to blow this or we'll miss our window.
Yeah.
No, they were just like running and blew it as soon as they could. It wasn't like they were trying to wait for a particular moment. It was, I've just finished doing this, then we blow it up.
Anyway, they managed to cut loose one of the cars from the train car. Meanwhile, Jorge and Brenda lure that big V-22, which for some reason flies 5 feet off the ground all the time, to a box canyon where it stops and unloads a bunch of people from... It has, like, multiple ways of unloading people, so it's doing them all at once. Like, as it's lowering itself to the ground, a whole bunch of folding seats unfold from the sides of the vehicle.
Well, yeah, it's got either, like, a drop-down from the side, like, zip-line down type thing, where you've got got like cords that you go down, or you can come out the back, because it also has the back flap.
Yeah, it has side and back flaps, both of which disgorge soldiers, but at the same time as it's lowering, a bunch of like roller coaster seats unroll from the sides of it that are empty. I assume they're to hold prisoners, but it's just weird that this thing just has so much space given over for storage of humans.
Yeah.
Anyway, at that point, it unloads too fast, and all of a sudden, there's
and
a whole...
Too furious.
And then Xander Cage rises.
All of the Vin Diesel movies show up.
Not a gun.
So they take over the ship because all the other kids with guns show up as well.
Yeah, so a whole bunch of kids. Brenda manages to just immediately get into the cockpit of this airplane thing.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing how fast and efficient it is. But of course, it's the airplane's fault for going towards the ground.
Yeah.
Like, what are they? Just shoot them. Just shoot the bad guys. Guys, what are you doing?
Oh, but they wanted to capture them because...
Why? What are they going to do with them?
Well, if they knew that these were immune people, they obviously want to capture them because they want immune people to fuck around with them.
Hmm.
But the fact that it's someone we know isn't immune and some old guy, you're like, oh, you're not a kid we can have run through a maze. We don't care about you.
Yeah, although we will learn throughout the course of the movie that she is immune. Dun, dun, dun. Spoiler alert that we don't understand.
Yeah.
Anyway, they kidnap the stupid airplane and fly back to where the train is and then skyhook away one of the two train cars full of kids.
Yeah. And sadly, they picked the wrong one.
Yeah, they got some of their friends, but not Minho.
Yeah, they were trying to get Minho. They apparently find two people that they also know, but do not seem to give a fuck about. They like hug him and they're like, oh, it's good to see you. Aw, damn, we didn't get Minho. Well, we're gonna have to go save him then.
Yeah, they know their names and stuff, so they're clearly from one of the previous two movies, but they are not in this film.
They are not given a fuck about. They are saved and then thrown into the background.
Never to be seen again.
Yeah, it's like background shots of the camp. You might see them and be like, oh, look, it's those two. I remember them.
Oh,
they
got
hugged or whatever.
Yeah, good for them. They got some hugs. One of them had a black eye.
Yeah, and I assume that's something that happened in the previous movie. I'll never know.
Yeah, who knows? Anyway, Thomas is super mad because he didn't successfully rescue Minho. Now, Thomas is clearly the main character of a young adult story because there are two women from different backgrounds that it seems as though he's going to have to choose between. Those being Brenda, the young rebel who's lived on the fringes her whole life, and Teresa, the insider, who is a scientist who technically works for the man.
Yeah, which, from what I gather from this movie, she betrayed them either at the end of the first movie or sometime during the second. I assume the second movie.
Yeah.
And she's actually working for Wicked.
We'll talk about Wicked at length. That
God
is the...
damn it.
So he's like an ingenue type who has to choose between a woman who represents the establishment and riches, and she's tall and willowy and you know, extraordinarily white, or Brenda, the young...
Who represents the street.
The street, and she's urban and edgy, and she's rough around the edges. So this is just, you know, a distaff Hunger Games, with the obvious distinction that there is no way that Thomas isn't super gay for his friend Minho.
Oh my God, he is so gay for Minho. Like, there's a point where you're like, dude, I understand that you want to save him, but it's also because you really miss that D. Like, that is 100% what's
going on. Let's be clear here. He's not wrong.
Let's be honest.
Minho is sweet and sharp looking.
Minho can get it.
He's mostly unconscious or beat up through this movie. It's fine. He's still doing it for everybody involved.
You should feel dirty. That kid's like 17. Actually, I'm sure that kid's like 35.
That's the thing. I think he's supposed to be playing 17, but he's not 17.
So yeah, the whole thing is they get back to the camp, and I guess fucking Barry Pepper's got a plan to put everybody on an old ship and go to a safe haven, which that is never a good plan. Like, having been someone who has seen a lot of zombie films, apparently this is
now. This is a zombie film. Did you know the Maze Runner movies were about zombies at all?
I had no idea. I mean, the first Maze Runner I thought was just a weird experiment
thing. It's just Big Cube. Like, yeah. There's the parallels between the first Maze Runner and Cube are simply, it's just like, hey, what if Cube had a budget?
Yeah, what if Cube was a budget and young adult? And you're like,
yeah,
okay.
I can see that. You can probably see less people diced into tiny cubes. And
yeah, it's the PG-13 version of Cube.
Yeah, I think a lot more than just the one guy with mental issues is going to live.
Yeah. So, you know, at that point I went, all right, it's a weird, like, science fiction experiment thing. But when you get to this movie, you're like, oh, you took every post-apocalyptic trope and smashed all of them together.
Yeah. No, this is...
Because this is Mad Max, Zombieland, fucking...
There's a little bit of the Rifts role-playing game in this.
There's... I mean, you don't usually get a lot of... trying to find a cure post-apocalypse things, but it is in there as well. So you've got, like...
Isn't there, like, the Book of Eli or whatever is partially that? I don't know.
I don't know, but it is the...
Tank Girl has Finding a Cure, I think, is part of it.
Yeah, because it's, like, a plague.
Yeah.
But then the plague is also zombies, but then also... Everyone's like out in the dirt driving around in fucking dune buggies,
or they're in a future city and the future city has a bunch of noir stuff happening in it, so you've got some Blade Runner.
Oh yeah, well, the actual city itself is very like fascist high tech.
Also, memory editing is just a thing that everyone assumes is normal, like you could just edit people's memories however you want, and it's just tossed off as a background element.
Oh, it's just a thing we do. Yeah. We can just, you know, fuck around with your memory. We've got Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind in the background here.
Don't worry about it. It's fine. Hey, you want to get some Eternal Sunshine up in the end? No problem.
Yeah, we'll do that for you.
You want to forget banging Kate Winslet because you're the weirdest idiot in the world?
The weird thing to me, though, is it's also, I mean, it's very Hunger Games-y.
You want to forget banging Jim Carrey?
I really want to forget that.
We understand.
Oh, my. Yes. Please come this way.
Oh, you should get into line B.
Just hitting a button over the loudspeaker. We've got a priority. We've got a code carry here.
We've got a real Winslet situation on our hands. Usually this place is full of gyms.
So the weird thing is with the Hunger Games aesthetic for that cube, the fucking maze that they ran through is, now that I know that it is a post-apocalyptic situation where there's like only one city that still exists in the entire world and everything's all fucked up, I'm like, how did you at some point find the real estate, the manpower, and everything else to make a maze for these people?
Yeah, and then to make it look hundreds of years old.
Yeah, I'm like, you can't just do this. You can't just be like, oh, we had a giant, like, miles-long 3D printer hit maze. And then let it go.
No, it's fine, John. Ancient aliens from Jupiter built a bunch of mazes all over the Earth, and when the apocalypse happened, it uncovered them.
Oh, obviously.
That's fine. Don't worry about it.
Well, it turns out the pyramids of Giza, if you hit the top of it, turn into a maze.
We're just solving for X, John. It's fine. We have the information from this movie. How does the first movie make any sense? We got this.
The answer is it doesn't, but...
Okay, so basically, they all get back to this hideaway location with a goal to get to another one.
They're going to get to the safe haven where Wicked can't get to them, and it's safe from the zmobbies and
the zombos. But unfortunately, it's not good enough for Thomas.
He needs Minho.
He needs his boyfriend. I can't. Are you not supposed to interpret this movie that way?
He is. I understand, as I was saying, the whole, like, oh, I want to rescue my friend, but it is a little more than that.
I almost think that the actors read the subtext and acted appropriately.
Oh, they had a Hook situation?
I think so. I mean, explain that, though.
Oh, well, in Hook, Dustin Hoffman and...
The guy from Who Framed Roger Rabbit and everything.
Yeah, damn. But... And Bob Hoskins.
Bob Hoskins, yes. Yeah. Okay.
So Dustin Hoffman and Bob Hoskins decided while filming Hook, even though it was not a directorial choice or in the script, that Hook and Smee were gay for each other. And that's how they play it the whole way. And
they do, though, but they don't play it as fresh young love. They play it as an old married couple.
They are an old gay couple.
Yeah.
And that is the way they decided to do that. And that is basically what happened with this movie, is the two of them went, oh yeah, no, we're totally gay for each other. Don't worry about that. Like, yes, Thomas is technically picking between these two girls, but no, he isn't.
Well, here's the thing. He doesn't choose between either of them. There's no point in the movie where Brenda and him even have a moment. I think maybe that we're reading this as young adult with a little bit of preconceived notion, and that he is just straight up gay. Because there's a lot of subtext from him that's throughout the film, not just for Minho, but also for Newt.
Yeah.
I think there's... some element of the actor choice where he was like, I think this guy is not into either of these obvious female choices laid before him. I think he just loves dudes.
I mean, they really, really want to push the you're in love with Teresa thing.
Yeah.
Like, a lot.
It's not flying. That dog won't
hunt.
There's
zero chemistry there.
Yeah. And you can tell they didn't even try with Brenda, which I think, honestly, smart choice. Because those love triangles are always the worst part of any given one of those movies.
Yes. The, oh, poor me. I have to pick between two beautiful people that both want me. You're like, ugh.
Meanwhile, I am so plain and yet so special.
Yeah.
Perhaps I drive an old pickup truck to emphasize my uniqueness.
So anyway, Thomas drives this old pickup truck.
Well, okay,
he does.
He does. The very next scene of the film is him going, no, fuck it. I'm going to wherever that train was going, and I'm getting Minho.
Yeah, they hear about the last city, and apparently Jorge's like, oh yeah, I was there. It exists.
Yeah, it definitely exists. It's probably Los Angeles or San Francisco. It's hard to tell, but it's definitely a Southern California city.
It's definitely there.
Yeah. Anyway, so basically Thomas is all set up to stomp off on his own. But wouldn't you know it, his friends won't let him go without some help. And that's where Newt shows up. And we've seen Newt already. He was the guy cutting apart the train earlier. And his silent friend, who apparently was important previously, Frypan.
Which, when we got out of this movie, we couldn't remember his name, and it's probably because it was Frypan. What?
They only said it once. I assume so they could sell action figures or whatever. And they're like, well, we're going. Oh, thanks, Newt. And thank you, too, Frypan.
And thank you, 80-yard Frypan.
Frypan. So it's spelled like the item. So I assume that Frypan's a maze survivor because
yes.
A lot of them have goofball names that they got from not having memories or whatever.
Well, I assume anyone who's on screen and is known by Thomas is a maze survivor outside of fucking like Barry Pepper and Jorge.
Well, I don't think Newt is.
Oh, Newt is. Newt was in the maze.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. Okay. So, because at this point in the movie, to us, to you and me, it's still a surprise what happens next.
Well, yes, but Newt was also very much in the maze, and it is mentioned later in the movie that he was in the maze.
Okay. Well, they come up to some big tunnel, and it says, like, oh, this is an infection checkpoint.
Yeah.
And at that point, we're starting to think, oh, so the world fell apart because of some sort of virus. Okay, well, that's cool. That's interesting.
Yeah, there was some plague that killed everyone, and these are the remnants. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. So they have to go through this tunnel. I don't know why they have to go through this tunnel. I mean, it looks like there's land on either side of it.
Yeah, it looks like you could drive around, but, you know, whatever.
Fine. It's fine. You know, it's got all of huge amounts of Southern California. You could probably go around.
All of these tracts of land here.
I mean, maybe the problem is that there's no gas. Because it doesn't seem like there'd be gas stations.
Well, they certainly never talk about it,
yeah.
And it is never a problem.
There's never a point where they discuss how all the equipment that they have is continually powered and operational.
Yes. The same thing with the city having power, and there's no real power station.
There's
that
no
you
visible
can see.
Power station. There's everyone's got walkie talkies that consistently. I guess that makes sense. No one has cell phones. It's all walkie talkies.
Yeah.
So anyway, they have to drive through this tunnel, and the first thing they say is, "I don't know, man. That seems like a place where cranks would hang out." And I was like, yeah, you know, I can see that.
Some Jason Statham up in there. That's definitely a place where Jason Statham would be.
I just pictured it as grumpy old dudes. Just
crying.
Just sitting there, Russians done infected my chicken development. Just some old cranks.
No, man, it's just some Jason Statham.
A Laotian done moved into my neighborhood.
And I'm the transporter.
So fine, it's full of Jason Stathams.
And old men, both. Both of them.
Cranky old Jason Stathams.
It's cranky old men starring Jason Statham.
In 20 years, they're going to make that Grumpier Old Men remake starring Jason Statham, and he's still going to be dating Anne Margaret because that woman is immortal.
That was the first clue that, oh, wait a minute, is this a zombie movie?
Yeah, this is the setup for a zombie scene.
Like, that's what this is, and then sure enough, there are zombies, and you're like, wait, hold the fuck up.
When did this
happen in this movie?
Didn't we already do a young adult zombie thing? I think it was called, like, Warm Hearts. Didn't we do that? I could have sworn that happened.
There's Warm Bodies, and yes, but that was just Romeo and Juliet with zombies.
Okay, fair enough. But they start driving down the tunnel, and sure enough, they come across just some guy standing there.
Yeah, some twitchers.
Doing some twitching, and then they're like, oh, it's fine, it's just one, just go around him, just fine, just go, like there's just one zombie anywhere.
Oh yeah, it's just one guy. This guy's just been hanging out here.
I wonder if zombies work with the same way that ninjas work, where if there's just one zombie, that's the most powerful zombie ever, and you better watch the fuck out.
Okay.
The inverse proportionate power of zombies.
Yeah, they're like ninjas.
Yeah.
So one ninja fights one zombie, how does that go?
I think you get two zombies, and then the next ninja beats them both.
The, So the whole, we stop the car and there's one zombie in front of us and they have to like yell at the driver to keep going is a very weird thing that happens in zombie films a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I never understand it because you'd think you'd see one of them go like, oh shit, let's go. Like,
yeah,
let's.
But instead he's like, ooh, let's investigate the zombie. And it's like, no, man, you know better. What are you doing?
What
you doing, fry pan?
What is your deal, bro? There's a gas pedal. Put your foot on it.
Yeah. But, I mean, either way, whether it's just one zombie or a whole bunch of them, you're going to need to drive the car.
Yeah. I mean, this is the point where you either go, oh, we're turning around, or you plow through.
You just lost a star in your Lyft rating, buddy. But anyway, it turns out that
then they get surrounded by zombies.
Yeah, and it turns out that these are the kind of zombies where they can have brief moments of lucidity because they're not quite zombies. They're just sick people.
Well, they're 28 days later zombies.
Yeah, they're rage
virus.
They are
rage zombies.
Yeah, they're fast and they still attack and chew on people and stuff, but their bites don't cause zombieism.
Oh, they do.
Oh, they do? Okay.
Yeah, there was a very brief moment when we were back at the camp where Brenda rolls up her the leg of her pants and she has a bite mark on her leg and she says, oh, if I crank out, I'll let you know.
Oh, okay, that's right, because there's a whole thing about how I was in the bathroom.
Ah.
Okay, moving forward, the zombies are suddenly surrounding the car and one of them is like, hey, you gotta let me in, you gotta help me, guys, please help me, I'm trapped in this stupid tunnel and there's all these
I'm trapped in this bad movie, guys.
Yeah, guys, help me, there's all these crank zombies here, help, and you know, other zombies are just trying to jump in the car.
Yeah, there's a degree of how far gone you are.
Yeah,
because it's like you can be infected with the virus and be like aggressive but still sort of have your brain, like you can say things, and then there's just full-on rage zombie.
Yeah, and there's a lot of shots in this movie of zombies sort of testing plastic walls where they're just going like, you know, like when you throw a sticky thing at a wall and it starts sliding down it, that you get that. So it's a lot of background elements. It's just zombies sort of pressing themselves up against walls.
Well, because it's zombies,
it's what they do.
Yeah,
so they drive through but they can't make it. They hit a big water tank and fall over and flip the car.
Yeah, but then they get saved by Brenda and Jorge.
Brenda and Jorge show up in yet another battle car, and they're like, hey guys, we thought you'd like a ride.
So they get to the last city, and it's
Chi Town.
It is very much, if you've ever read Rifts or seen anything for Rifts, it's Chi Town, and the Burbs are around it.
Including the Burbs, yeah. It's a half-finished Chi Town with the Burbs.
So you have this giant fuck-off wall, like...
hundreds of feet high.
Huge wall, like at many stories tall, up from the depths.
And Godzuki's there.
And then around it, just sort of where the wall, like, entrance is, because they have a place where, like, cars could come out, has sprung up, like, a giant tent city, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, there's a spot where the wall fell. Also, there's Darmok and Jalad.
Yeah.
At Tanagra.
There's Shaka when the walls fell.
There it is.
I would like to say, another weird thing to me that I didn't understand what was going on is, as soon as I found out from this tunnel scene that, oh, this is supposed to be a zombie apocalypse scenario.
Yes.
Every building that you see that isn't in this last city looks like it has been, like, bombed. Not just bombed, but, like, nuked. Because it is a shell of concrete that is mostly crumbling.
Yes.
That's not what a zombie apocalypse does.
No, it looks like they fought a big old protracted war against the zombies that included just bombing huge chunks of the countryside.
But
which is probably why there's no other cities. Because you'd think, like, eventually, let's say that I was right and that they were basically holed up in Camp Pendleton and then they drive to Los Angeles. That means they have to go through Oceanside. So at some point, they're going to drive through a city. Like, they're going to drive through a city, but they don't. It's just empty terrain, which means nukes probably did get used. So, again, we're solving for X and Y here, where we're trying to figure out what happened in the previous two movies.
There's still functioning train tracks that didn't get destroyed in this.
Those might be new. We don't know.
Well, they might be. Considering
also, train tracks.
Fucking Wicked apparently has the ability to build anything they want instantly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they built a giant maze, John.
They built a giant maze, and they built
Chi-town.
Walls
yeah.
that only showed up in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Because Jorge was at the last city before. He's like, I've seen this, but the walls are new.
Yeah.
So, sometime into the last 3 to 5 years, this city built 100-foot-high walls, and the people in the burbs allowed them to do this and didn't, like, rush them at some point to get into the city. Or they were kept out in any way before the walls were built?
Also,
I don't understand.
Here's the first thing to address your first concern. The nicest thing about train tracks is that they're more or less nuke-proof. Unless you directly nuke the tracks, what else was going to happen to them?
Well, that was my assumption, is tracks go through city stuff a lot, and that you'd have, like, collapsed buildings.
Yeah, you have a bunch of ruins you have to clear, but ultimately, the endless miles of track across open countryside are going to be there, because why would you bomb open urban countryside.
Oh yeah.
So tracks. So trains are a great thing to have surviving after an apocalypse. So that made sense to me. That's fine. The walls, I'm less clear on. I mean, they even have a line in the movie where Patricia Clarkson gets to say, like, "Look at that. Look what human ingenuity can do. We built those walls in 3 years."
It's like, what? How?
Why?
No, you didn't. Like, right now, if a functioning country was like, oh, let's build like 200-foot-high fucking walls around an entire city and mount like giant guns and whatnot, and it has to be super thick concrete, and here we go. I'd be like, that doesn't happen in 3 years. You can't build like an on-ramp to a freeway in 3 years.
I think in the next 3 years, we'll see whether or not you can build a giant wall in 3 years, John. I think we'll find out whether or not you can build a great big wall to keep out the undesirables in about 3 years.
Oh, I don't think we will see that. I'm pretty sure we will never see that.
No, I think this is our chance to find out whether or not it can be done.
Well, the answer is no, it will never be started.
It actually already has been started.
Well, it has been, we're looking at it.
So anyway, moving forward, they have to get into the city, so they drive forward to the burbs, which they don't make any sense in this movie. Like, the Chi-Town burbs kind of make sense because...
Yeah, I mean, I would like to just sort of run through the plot very quickly, because the shit that we want to actually talk about has nothing to do with the plot as much as it does what is going on and
all
how
right.
did we come
so
here.
We're gonna have to be, so as we make our way through, I just want to create a mental list of things we're going to talk about soon. Zombie body integrity and what the fuck is with the burbs.
Yeah.
That's two things so far.
Like, when they get to the burbs, they find Gally. That's where we get him coming back, which he was in the original maze. He apparently killed someone and then they left him for dead.
Yeah, he killed Duncan, I think they said. It was Duncan or something, or Charles or something like that. Right.
Yeah, Charles Duncan Donuts.
One of those. Either Charles or Duncan, right in front of all of them. And then they left him. They killed him. And
no, you put a spear through me and left me for dead, but I didn't die.
I didn't. I'm alive.
They found me and then realized that I was immune, and that was cool somehow.
So Thomas gives him a good old sock to the face, and he's like, yeah, well, I deserve that. But then I guess one of the background people, like Frypan or something, is like, yeah, okay, he did kill our friend, but he was super high on Stinger at the time, and he was half dazed.
He was half out of his mind because he was stung, and he didn't realize what was going on. You're like, okay, great.
All right.
More stuff from the first movie that I don't know.
It's probably got something to do with the robot spider lizard that we see at one point.
Yeah, we then get their introduction to the like big boss of the burbs, which is a fucked up half zombie Walton Goggins.
Yeah, Walton Goggins in this movie doing an amazing performance of a character who makes no sense.
Yeah, he has no function here, because the way that he is portrayed is like, oh, he's like a big crime boss or a, like,
well, he says
he's in charge is what you would see.
He even, like, one of his like three lines of dialogue in the whole movie is, you understand the kind of person I am, right? I'm a shrewd businessman.
Yeah, I don't give something without getting something. It has to be in my favor or whatever. I go, how?
I make my decisions based on self-preservation and profit.
But you're living in the fucking burbs. Like, who's taking orders from you?
Just gang guys? He's just assembled.
And also, why you are like a half second away from turning into a full zombie?
Oh no, he's walking around with an IV drip of what they call Titan, which is apparently is an inoculation you can take against Crank. It won't cure you, but it will stop the spread.
Yeah, he has got the their little antivirus thing that is not a cure, like you say, but it's just here. This means you won't progress farther as long as you've got that in you,
or at least it slows it down because he is very close to zombie. He's got.
Well, I assume it's because there are stretches where he does not have this.
Yeah. He doesn't have a nose, among other things.
Yeah, he's lost his nose. Half of his face is just giant blue veins.
And there's worms coming out of him, like dried, scaly, wormy things.
The veins, like the blue vein thing is a thing for these zombies, but they also have the special effect of like pulsing.
Yes.
Like things are going through them.
Yeah, so there's crusty pulses. And then he offers Thomas a handshake when they make a deal, which you'd think if one of your hands is all zombified and covered in crispy bits, you'd offer the other. You'd be like, hey man, I go for the Boy Scout handshake because, you know, I don't want you to break off any chunks of me.
Yeah, but no, he's doing it because he's like, oh, this is an intimidation tactic.
Yeah, shake my gross hand.
But Thomas doesn't care because he's immune, so he's like, whatever, I don't give a fuck that you're part zombie.
Yeah, you're all crunchy, whatever. So anyway, that's Walton Goggins' character. He's very much the boss of Gally.
And he's going to get them into the city. That's how they're going to get in there to save Minho.
Yes. And it turns out that the way into the city is just like an 8-mile-long tunnel through a sewer.
Yeah, it's
line.
Just 8 mile. And then there's a bunch of mom spaghetti down there.
Yeah, and there's vomit on the sweater already. And there's no Mekhi Phifer. I was so disappointed.
Yeah, that's one thing that I really missed. There was no movie, and there was no Mekhi Phifer.
So, anyway, it turns out they just have a bunch of Christmas lights strung up down about 8 miles worth of underground sewer tunnel.
Yeah, they just walk through the sewer. They
Four times through the course of this film, by the way.
Oh, after they walk through once, we never show anyone in the tunnel again, but then they're allowed to just pop back and forth as they please.
Well, they just press X to fast travel.
Oh, yeah. Once they get there, they're like, oh, it's on the map. We can just go there.
It's fine. Just fast travel back to the underground dungeon in the burbs.
But they go there, check it out, see, like, oh, this is where the city is. This is what the walls are. This is what's going on.
Yeah.
And then they go back into the burbs, and they're like, hey, we have a plan-ish?
Well, it turns out that Gally knew an additional thing, which is he knows where Teresa is. And Teresa has taken up work as a scientist for Wicked, the core evil organization in the movie. Which, by the way, here are three more things I wanted to talk about that when we get to the end of this, we need to talk about all the broken shit. So we've got zombie body integrity. What the fuck is going on with the burbs? How on earth would anyone allow a company named Wicked to get any kind of power or anything?
Oh, yeah. Also, for most of the movie, I would say up until I actually see the lettering on the building that is like WCKD, I thought they were saying Wicket, and it was a person named Wicket. And I was like, hold on, did they make the bad guy in this movie named after an Ewok? Hold the fuck
no,
up.
No, it just is Wicket.
Yeah, it's Wicket. And there's an Ewok, and he's like, yo, I engineered this plague because someone set me loose in a bio lab, and what I did was I created weapons.
Because
that's what I do.
I made a zombifying plague that, you know, it doesn't work on Ewoks.
Wouldn't you know it?
All I gotta do now is wait a couple hundred years for everything to decompose completely, and then I'm gonna bring in my Yub-Nub brothers.
My Yub-Nub brothers.
Hey, man, I kind of hope that deep down you're one of my Yub-Nub brothers.
Oh man, that really sounds way too close to being an Eskimo brother.
Fair enough.
We're Yub-Nub brothers.
It's not, though.
It's not.
It just means that we've both hit a stormtrooper with a rock.
We've both nubbed the same Yubs.
Yubs passing in the nub.
Anyway, yes, I want to get through the plot as quickly as possible. They find out that Teresa's there. They have a plan to break in, and that plan involves mostly just dressing up like soldiers and walking in after they kidnap Teresa.
Yeah, one thing we didn't mention was what the whole deal with Walton Goggins is and why he even showed them the exit. They've promised to bring him a bunch of the serum back. That's
their whole thing, is when we go to save Minho and we're in the Wicked building, we'll give you a giant bag of serum.
Also, there's a scene where they walk up right up to the door of the building, and because they're all wearing like body trackers, they're just immediately picked up on computers, and Littlefinger orders for giant cannons to shoot them, and instead he just shoots a bunch of people in the crowd.
Yeah.
All right, moving forward, they pull off their big plan to, I guess, kidnap Teresa and then make her help them.
Yeah. I would say the last third of this movie is the heist.
Yeah.
Which, again, just like the train scene, very well done, very high budget.
Yeah, and cool, and it's got all kinds of neat twists and turns.
It's got one of the most mind-bogglingly stupid things in it, which is Walton Goggins, who shows up again.
Yeah, Walton Goggins is in two scenes in this movie. In the first one, he introduces himself as a shrewd business fellow who only operates out of self-preservation and a desire for control and profit. And then the next scene, he kills himself to blow open a door in the wall.
Yeah, the next scene, he is a political martyr who is rallying the people to his egalitarian cause. And you're like, whoa, hold on. You had two different characters here, and you just made both of them Walton Goggins.
Yeah, because he just suicide bombs the wall, and then a big war breaks out on the streets between the people from the burbs and the people from the city.
Yeah, because everyone in the burbs wants to get into the city.
Yeah. By the way, let's add that to the list. What the fuck is everyone in this city doing exactly?
Oh, yeah. When they're in the city, you see, like, there's a functioning, like, train line, and things are happening, and there are people in suits
just walking and from around subways.
And I'm like, what job do you have?
What are you doing? What job is it?
It's the post-apocalypse. You're not a fucking like data analyst in some building somewhere. No one gives a shit. The only building doing anything worthwhile is the Wicked building,
and
trying to find a cure.
Presumably you've got some people working law enforcement, sanitation, and power generation, and after that, granted, I'll be fair, there's a lot of like ads and stuff all over the city. There's billboards like,
well, all of them are for Wicked. They're all like, oh, come help Wicked.
Yeah, and there's stuff like Vita Water, drink it once a day and it keeps the flare away.
Yeah, I don't understand what anyone is doing in this town.
Mm-hmm. But there, I mean, basically what we're saying is that there seems to be a lot of mid-management functionaries that don't work at Wicked that are just still going to offices.
Yeah, guys who are just going to some building and you're like, okay, but why?
What are they getting paid? And in what fashion are they being paid for their job? There's only one city left, and here's an important thing that's missing from this film in any capacity, John.
Food riots.
No, I mean, that actually happens. What's really missing is a government of any kind.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's no government. There's no one in charge. There's just a Wicked building where people are trying to find the cure.
Mm-hmm.
And
are they in charge? Are they? Is Wicked in charge?
I don't know. They seem to be the central body of the town. But
so are they paying random businessmen to go to other? Are they generating a currency structure?
I mean, I have to imagine in a last city scenario, it's just you get a ration if you're doing a job, and like maybe better living quarters is what you get paid in. If you have a higher up job,
it makes like so little sense. I mean, I understand the idea that they're trying to keep everyone busy so that they don't just riot or go crazy in there. So they're like, yeah, you still have to work as a telephone salesman. Like
the phones don't work, so you're just talking into nothing.
But at the end of the day, you receive a cube of ration food and
you get a bed.
So hey, good for you. Yeah, but by the way, there is a dress code.
Let's get you in that suit right now.
Let's be serious. Everyone needs to wear a brown suit.
Anyway, they attack. It turns out, we find out Newt, the buddy to Thomas, is infected, and he is not immune, which most of the people in the maze were, but he's like, oh, I guess they stuck me in there because, I don't know, I'm a control group or some shit.
We don't, at this point, this is easily one of the more confusing things about this movie, having not seen the other ones. It appears as though either the maze makes you immune to the plague.
No, it's people that are immune to it, and they need you, because at one point when they're taking the serum from Minho,
yeah,
they're basically just having him get freaked out and adrenaline, and that's what's making him create antibodies. But they're like, oh, it's not as effective as the maze was at creating these antibodies, but you have to be immune first, and that's why they have all these kids sent into the maze.
Here's the thing. This is definitely an issue of supply and demand, where they're like, you get way more antibodies out of a guy if you make him run through our insanely huge continent-sized super maze full of killer robots.
Yeah, our terror kill maze.
You get a few grams less if you just put, you know, tie them up in a laboratory and scare them, but no one dies. You don't have to pay upkeep on a giant killer robo maze, and you can just put them in again tomorrow.
Yep, it's real stupid.
Yeah.
And I have never once seen anything in this third movie that makes me go, oh, I understand why there was a giant dumb maze now. The logo for fucking Wicked is a huge maze, and I don't understand why.
There's also Minho, while he's in his sleep-induced terror dreams during one of the scenes of him, dreams that he's in the maze again. So he sees like his old friends from the maze like doing random stuff, and then he's being chased down a dark hallway by a lizard robot spider.
Yep.
Which I think those must be the source of the dreaded sting that made...
I assume.
Yeah, who knows? So he's being haunted around by one of those things. But ultimately, he still makes, you know, for one guy being scared for a light afternoon, makes a tremendous big bottle of adrenaline for them to use.
Well, I think that's the antibodies that are coming out of his blood.
Okay, well then, in any event, it sort of seems like he produced a reasonable amount of it. And I just, at this point, I wonder if mazes are just obsolete?
I don't know.
I don't think they are, because they're trucking kids around.
Yeah, they still are but I think they were training those kids in from wherever the maze was into the city, because they're like, oh, wait a minute, that's the dumbest idea ever.
Yeah, just bring them in and we'll just scare them on a lab table.
Yeah, we'll just bring them in and we're going to have Sully come out here and Mike Wazowski, and they're going to scare them. And
no problem.
I mean, it turns out if we make them laugh, we get more antibodies.
Oh, dude, if we just cross this movie over with Monsters, Inc., we're in business.
But yeah, that's fucking stupid. That's another thing to talk about. But Newt's infected. So during the heist, he
starts coughing and
he gets all fucked up. They save Minho, but afterwards Newt is turning.
So meanwhile, it turns out that there are 20, Teresa tells them when they kidnap her, that there are 28 total immune people in the building, and they're going to rescue all of them, which means Brenda needs to help break in with them and steal a bus, because it turns out there's a bunch of city buses.
Well, yeah, because it's Gally, Newt, and Thomas are actually in the building.
Yeah.
And then Brenda goes to steal a bus.
She takes Frypan.
Frypan goes to steal a skyhook thing.
Yeah, he steals
one of those cranes.
One of those giant construction cranes.
Yeah.
So So Brenda manages, with the help of Galley and Frypan and whatever, she manages to steal or rescue the 28 children.
Brenda's just in a fucking...
She's in a bus.
Bus.
So the group manages to break into the Wicked Building and rescue 27 of the 28 kids.
Yeah.
Plus they get a lot of the Titan antivirus stuff. But of course, the one kid they didn't get is Minho.
Yeah, because Minho's up in the lab and they're just going to fucking drain him dry.
Yeah, they're going to harvest him to death, which again, seems kind of short-sighted, but...
It's very short-sighted, and I don't understand any decision that is made in this movie.
Whatever. Janssen's just a bad guy. Tech Janssen is just a bad guy. He makes bad guy based decisions.
Yeah. Well, we also find out that the virus is airborne and probably everyone in the city is either infected or will be within a month.
Yes. So, okay. Again, though, Thomas is like, well, I got 27 out of 28 of my job done. That's pretty good odds. But I am super gay for Minho.
So it's time to go save him.
So we're going to go save him by myself. So him and Newt go off to save Minho. Galley leads the other kids down to a bus with Brenda in it. When Brenda realizes that Thomas and Newt aren't there, she sends Galley off to go rescue them. And then she takes the 28 kids out for a fun joyride to try and escape from a bunch of police and stuff.
Yep. They managed to escape Jensen's evil squad by jumping out of the Wicked Building at at least 12 to 15 stories up.
Well, okay, we're talking about two different groups now. This is Thomas Frypan.
Yeah, Minho gets saved.
Yeah, Thomas, Newt, and Minho jump out halfway up this Wicked skyscraper building and land in a pool.
And land in the, you know how there are outside of, you know, office buildings and things, they'll have those little pools.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how normally they're about maybe a foot deep? This one is an Olympic-sized pool, apparently, that's like 40 feet deep, because they jump out, land in the pool, and then just bob up out of it.
Now, I can tell you, because I've done a lot of cliff diving in my days, John, because I used to be a Boy Scout,
yep,
that you don't need all that much water to jump from a really high distance. Because no matter how high up you jump from, you usually only go about 6 or 7 feet underwater.
Yep.
Which means that this does need to be 6 or 7 feet deep, or probably, you could probably get away with like 5 or 6 feet deep and just slow down before you impact on the water on the bottom. It is way deeper than any actual fountain should be.
Oh, yeah. There is no fountain in any business place where they're like, oh, yeah, we wanted this to be about, like, 7 feet deep.
Yeah. So, but that's what it is. I like to think it's not even, it's just a moat. Like, this is my real thing. I think it's a decorative moat. I mean, we live in zombie times in this movie. You tell me you don't want a decorative moat?
But it serves nothing. There's a giant walkway next to it.
It's a giant retractable walkway.
It isn't. It's concrete.
It's retractable concrete. Oh, you know what else it is? It's destructible. Like, if zombies start swarming, you just blow up the charges on your concrete bridge thing, and boom, you got a moat.
But it's not a bridge. It is the ground. Like, there is an aerial shot, and there are basically two pools.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were the civil engineer who designed the Wicked Building in The Last City.
I am.
Okay. Well, then...
Sir.
Then, sir, it's a pleasure to meet you, and great work on your decorative moat.
So then they get surrounded by soldiers and Galley saves them because he's still dressed up as a soldier.
Yeah, so he's one of the four soldiers that surrounds them. He shoots the other three and he's like, looks up where they jump from and he's like, you guys are fucking crazy. And then they run.
Yeah.
Meanwhile.
So everyone basically gets out.
Well, I guess my favorite one.
Frypan.
Yeah, Frypan, because this is the best. Frypan stole one of those 300-foot high super cranes, or at least commandeered it. I don't think you can steal it because it's not mobile.
Yeah.
But Brenda goes on a merry chase through the city with a bus full of children until she finally gets cornered by too many police officers, at which point the bus is picked up by the giant crane, lifted off the ground, like, you know, like the bus in Jurassic Park 2.
Yep.
Just dropped outside yeah, the walls.
Just pulled up, moved over, and dropped outside walls.
Yes, just picks it up and puts it on the other side of the walls. We then cut to a scene where the kids are all getting out of the bus, and Frypan is there.
Frypan has climbed down from his giant, like, 300-foot-tall crane, come out of the city again, and is where the children are in the matter of...
A scene change.
I want to say maybe a minute.
Yeah, it doesn't make... the best case scenario is
like,
that he
shows up and he's like, everyone calls me Frypan, but I'm Barry Allen. I'm the Flash.
I mean, the only thing that would make any sense is if what he actually did was get out, run along the crane, and then go down the crane's hook wire to back down to where the...
Which, boy howdy, that didn't happen.
Yeah, because that would be a really cool scene, and you'd think they'd want to film it.
Yeah.
Like, if he was out on a 300-foot-high crane running along a giant gantry in the sky, and then going down a giant metal rope to get to the bus, that would be
That would be a thing you'd show.
That'd be a neat scene, and instead they just show him, like, just teleporting to where the kids are. But, you know, we've already established that they have fast travel to get in and out of the city.
Oh, yeah. So he just hit X and was outside the walls.
Opened up his maps, selected the bus, and hit X.
Yeah.
Just pop. Hi, I'm Frypan. Don't worry about it.
So everyone else is getting out, and then Teresa comes over the speakers for the city and is like, hey, Thomas, hey, your blood is actually super special, and this is why it's a young adult film, because your blood, you're not just immune. Your blood is the cure. You are, your blood is Depeche Mode. Your blood is the Smiths, Thomas.
Your blood is blood flower.
Thomas, get back here. We need to take your blood, because your blood is the cure.
Thomas, your blood is the Pixies. I mean, hang on, I can do better.
Hold on. Wait a minute. So then he has a giant fight with Newt, who turns into a zombie.
And he does the most cliche zombie fight ever, where he's like, I don't want to kill you. And he's like, you have to kill me. I'm zombifying you.
No, you don't understand. I'm a zombie now.
I won't ever do it.
We'll get you the serum. I'm like, dude, this guy is way too far gone for that.
He is zombied. You need to kill him. He's like, I won't do it, man. I won't kill you.
He's got black goop coming out of his mouth, and his face is made of veins.
He's swinging a knife at you and begging for death, and you're doing that fucking zombie friend thing.
Yeah, stop it. Just fucking stop it.
Just once, I'd like to see a movie where that never happens.
The guy's like, kill me! And he's like, okay.
Yeah, well, it makes sense.
Yeah, well, zombies.
I live in a zombie world. I'm up to speed.
I get it now.
Do you think that ever happens on The Walking Dead? Like, there's like nine seasons of that shit now. Do they actually do it?
Yes.
Please kill me? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Because that's the zombie show where it's like, oh yeah, we get it. We get it now.
All right, good. I hope that every season they introduce a new character who doesn't get it and is immediately devoured for their trouble.
I mean, like, yes.
My wife is turning! All right, I'll shoot you both.
All right, well.
Yeah, there you go. Problem solved. And I'll shoot you both twice, because I think I remember the rules of how this works, if I'm right. Because no matter how you die in...
Well, it's just brain. You got to get him in the
brain. Oh, yeah, brain. So if you shoot someone alive in the brain, they don't re-zombie.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so, yeah, he
Thomas is
Newt.
Like, I got to go back to Wicked, because I have the cure in my blood.
Boy, does he ever hold everyone else up, because he's like, all right, I'm going alone to rescue Minho. I did it. Oh, Newt's sick. I'm sending Minho ahead to get medicine and come back for Newt. Okay, fine. Minho goes running all the way up there to get the medicine. Brenda comes running back. At that point, he's finally accepted that Newt's too far gone and killed him.
Yeah.
And then he's like, all right, well, Newt's dead. I'm going back to Teresa. Hey, Brenda, sorry I made you drive around forever and then wander through the city looking for me, but now that you've seen me being dramatic, I'm leaving.
Yeah, now that you've seen me standing over the body of Newt, I gotta go.
Peace. I'm not gonna say anything. and so he goes back to Teresa, where he meets up with Patricia Clarkson, the kind of smart bad guy, but who was starting to turn around.
Yeah, the head of the science program, because you've got, like, the main military bad guy and the main science bad guy.
Yeah, and the science bad guy has started to see the light.
Yeah, the science bad guy's like, oh, what are we even doing? We fucked everything up. We made a giant maze. That was real stupid.
Everything I've done has been ridiculous. And then Aidan Gillen, Littlefinger, shows up and kills her.
Yeah.
And then stabs Thomas with a sleepy poison.
Yeah, so they make the cure out of him, and it turns out he's infected, and that's why he was so very, very insistent on this happening.
Yeah, and then I guess, so he turns way eviler. Like, he just ratchets his evil up at the end here. He's like,
oh, and now we'll make a new society where only I get to decide who lives and dies.
Yeah, and I'm going to take Teresa for myself, and I'll kill you because we have enough cure. And Teresa's like, you're going too crazy. So she hits him in the back of the head with a glass thing, and then she makes standard zombie movie mistake number 5, which is, oh, I hit this guy in the back of the head. I can stand around near him and do whatever I want.
I can now leave.
Yeah, it's
fine. I can just walk slowly away.
I'll just stay right here. It's fine. No, go for the kill. Finish.
Yeah.
Anyway, he stands up behind her, and, you know,
they have a whole thing.
They will fight.
They manage to kill Jensen with zombies.
Yeah.
Because there's a lab with zombies in it.
Yeah, they do the thing where they're all in a lab with zombies, and it's the scene from Jurassic Park where the velociraptors are stalking. Because at this point, Thomas is gut shot.
Yeah.
So he can't move much, and Teresa's just sort of edging backwards away from the gun. Then Thomas heroically stands up and throws a bucket and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so they
kill Jensen with zombies.
Yeah, they escape from the top of the building, which is currently blowing up, and then they get to the New Haven eventually. That's where Thomas wakes up, and oh boy, we're in Safe Haven, and there's corn here already.
Yeah, it's like Catalina Island or something. They get to basically Catalina Island, and there's corn there growing there for some reason, and everyone's got nice tents, and they have a fun party where they sing that Yub Nub song.
That's what happens.
Yep.
That is actually close enough to what happens.
Pretty much. Instead, Barry Pepper gives a dumb speech, points out a big rock, and says, carve your friends' names in this rock. And everyone goes and carves, like, Newt and Charles.
There's a giant rock full of names, and I have to assume these are people who died in the other movies, and we should be like, aw, I remember Zart.
Because Zart is front and center. You see all these normal names around it, like, oh no, a guy named Charles died. Oh, I feel sorry for Denise. Also, Zart.
Oh, that was the wizard we met, Zart.
We had to answer his riddles 3.
And then he got killed in the weird maze, because that's what this movie is. It's dumb bullshit wall to wall.
I like to think that Zart was a 1950s monster movie fish.
Just showed up and he's like,
are any of you having a bikini dance party? No? Then I die. Remember me. Carve my name on a stone.
Zart. And Jesus. So that's the end of the movie, is basically Thomas is like, oh, I'm sad that people have died, but we're here now, and
but
that's
he,
good.
He does have a vial of the actual serum, like the actual cure for the death plague. He's wearing it as a necklace.
Yeah, good. He's decided that he has the cure to all of humanity's troubles in his blood, but he's on Catalina Island, and fuck you, he's on vacation, I'm not doing anything. I'm gonna wear the cure as a necklace, that's how much I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. And then he reads a letter to himself from Thomas, who made him take it right
from
before
Newt.
He zombied from Newt, sorry, and he gives Minho a big old suggestive hug.
Yep.
And credits. And also credits. This is the end of the franchise and not just the end of the movie.
Yeah, there's no point where I was like, oh, there's a fourth movie where Thomas decides he's gonna go try and save humanity. Nope.
Well, there's a bunch of things in this movie that seem like they're set up for it. Like Walton Goggins feels like he should be set up for
the villain of the fourth movie.
Yeah, exactly, because he's like, I'm taking over the city with my ragtag crank infested masses, and then instead he kills himself.
And then in one of the most mind-boggling things, you have an entire burbs of people who are holding up signs when they first get there of like, we want in the city, we want to get in there, like they want the protection of the city. But as soon as they get in there, they begin controlled demolitions of every building. Like, there is a scene where one building is straight up just like crumbles down. I'm like, you guys walked in with a controlled demolition in mind for this building.
Yeah, they're taking the city down. Like, they're actually destroying the city instead of like trying, we want it. They want to level it.
Yeah, they were like, oh, we want to live in the city. JK, we want to blow up the city for no reason.
I mean, we didn't even mention it, but that's how Teresa dies. The city, that the building that she's on falls down underneath her.
Yeah, but you'd think, even if you're one of the burb people and you're like, oh, we hate these city people so much that we're going to blow up some of their buildings, you wouldn't blow up the building that ostensibly has a stockpile of cure.
I don't know, man. Maybe the crank's getting them real good. Maybe they're all flare zombies.
They're
now
all fucked up on that crank. All these Jason Statham running around with explosions.
Man, you get too much crank in you, you turn into Bai Ling. You don't want that to happen.
Nah, man. Fucking one of the lieutenants of Walton Goggins is running around with a military missile launcher?
Yeah, like on a big old truck. Like, he's got one of those ground mount military missile launchers, and he's using it to shoot buildings down.
Yeah. What the fuck is the end of this movie?
Yeah. Anyway, we've got a lot to talk about here. First of all, I want to talk about zombie structural integrity very briefly. We find a bunch of milling around zombies hanging around in that tunnel on the way to the last city.
Yes.
What are they doing in there? How are they not just falling over from lack of water? I mean, I understand.
Well, this is the big thing, is there is a difference between the undead zombie and the rage zombie.
Yeah, the biological agent zombie. And these are biological agent zombies, which means that because we don't have a magic explanation hiding behind them, they'll die of dehydration in 3 days. I don't care whether or not they eat humans now.
Yeah, I mean, you can get some water out of blood if you're drinking that down.
But they haven't got any to eat.
Like, because they don't attack each other.
Yeah.
And you have to assume no one has come through this tunnel in a while.
Yeah, no, definitely. So they're just standing around exactly like they were when they got flared, and just it's one of those things where you need to set your precedent for why that's the case, for why biological action doesn't kill your zombies or cause them to deteriorate or fall apart. Also, you need a reason for why they don't attack each other, because the climax of this movie hinges on Thomas tricking Jensen, the bad guy, by throwing a bucket that breaks a wall between him and some zombies, and Jensen goes like, ah, clever, instead of, you know, shooting the zombies with the gun he has drawn. He just goes, ah, I am undone, and is eaten by zombies.
No.
But he's infected with the virus.
Yeah, but he hasn't gone full zombie yet.
Okay, so zombies can tell whether or not you've gone full zombie enough to determine whether or not they should eat you.
Yes.
It doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense.
No, this is a zombie that is very poorly thought out because it's a virus. Like, the fact that it's, you're infected with it, but then it takes like weeks for anything to happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's a point there where you're like, okay, so like with Jensen or anyone else, you're like, all right, you're infected, so the zombies shouldn't attack you, but they are. What's the break point when they're like, oh, you got black goop coming out of your mouth, now we know you're one of us?
All right, second one. What's the point of the burbs?
I don't understand how The Last City allowed the Burbs to exist for two reasons. One is, if they're an actual threat that they're like, oh, these guys have fucking like military equipment, they are going to try and attack us, you'd think they would just wipe them out because they have way better equipment.
They have a tremendous number of like helicopters and cannons and stuff pointed at the city, at the Burbs.
Yes.
That they just aren't firing.
Two, you'd think that they would do something where they're like, oh yeah, we let people in if they're not infected. Like, we'll do a checkpoint or a lottery every month, and that's going to keep people in line because you go, oh, there's a chance you can get in. As long as there's a chance, you'd think you'd get people who would go, oh, I don't want to fuck this up because I might get in, I'm not infected.
But instead, there's zero communication. There's,
no.
There's no suggestion that the people from the Burbs ever get in there. There's no suggestion that food, water, or power ever comes out of there.
Yeah.
It's just they're surrounding it because it's like the place that, it's like they want to get in, but they can't. And so why might as well hang out here. But the problem is that the people in the city shouldn't allow it. The whole point of the city is we're scared of zombies. And then they were like, well, we're surrounded by zombies. Oh, do we want to kill them? No.
No, well, there's an entire community out there. And it's more than likely infected, but meh. Also, how did the Burbs survive this long without at least one dude who was crank infected, going crazy, biting some people, them going crazy, and then doing the whole zombie apocalypse thing within the Burbs themselves?
Yeah. And we've already talked about how the maze is ridiculous and doesn't make any sense in the context of this film, to the point where I was amazed that they even bothered to call this Maze Runner the Death Cure. Because I guess because it stars a Maze Runner, but other than that, there's like the connection. Here's the problem with these movies. I feel like the first one was like, we're trapped in a maze and it's a big mystery and what's happening. The second one must have been, oh no, zombies. And the third one was post-apocalypse. Like, they just wanted to do a world tour of tropes instead of having any kind of connected narrative. There's nothing about mazes in this film.
Oh, no. That was the thing, is this movie really, like I had said before, felt like they took a big old bowl of post-apocalypse ideas, threw all of it at the wall, and most of it stuck.
I mean, normally when you look at these young adult series, at least there's some sort of central theme by the end of them. I mean, Twilight is still about bullshit magic boy vampires by the end of the seventh book or whatever. And, like, you know, Hunter Games or whatever it's called. Hunger Games is still like, oh, I'm still really worried about District 12 or whatever.
Well, that one, I would say Hunger Games is the closest analogy to this movie that I can think of. But it's like the whole point is supposed to be like uprising of regular people against like an oppressive government. It's very, you know, communist. But the weird thing to me is, at least in the Hunger Games, the reason you've got that is it's set up as there is an oppressive government that is keeping us poor, whereas this one is there are zombies, but also an oppressive government, but it's not a government, it's a science site, but also the science site has all of the means it needs to create a giant maze and huge walls, but then also other random shit.
To me, I was just looking it up, trying to remember the name of the trilogy that this reminded me of, and that was the Tripod Trilogy. I don't know if you've ever read those.
Oh, it's about the guy with a huge dick.
Yeah, it's about a three-legged dog, and he has to choose between two pretty three-legged dogs. The Tripod Trilogy is a really, really old young adult series. I think it's from like the 70s, and it's like aliens in giant tripod vehicles attack. And in the first book, it's just like, oh, everyone in the world is scared of the giant tripod monsters, and they've reduced us to peasantry and primitive days.
Yeah.
By the third book, the humans have taken over already, and the whole book is about like, how do you fix the world? So it's like, oh, we all have tripod technology, and we live in the tripod cities, and we've actually started interacting with some of the tripod aliens and what have you. And it's like, you can barely draw a connection from the first book and the third one.
Oh yeah.
And that, I mean, I like that kind of thing, but in a movie it's like, what?
Well, yeah, I mean, for me it's the same thing of like the last Hunger Games film is, it's a bunch of rebels storming the government and trying to take over, and it's a giant civil war. And the first movie is, there's a cool thing that guys are doing like battle royale in.
Yeah.
And there is nothing in the last movie that has to do with the first movie.
That's true. Man, I just looked it up. The Tripods Trilogy is from 1967.
Dang.
Yeah.
You're so old.
I just read
them. Were you like 20 when you read those?
The books still exist. You can read them at any age. Folks, look up John Christopher's Tripod Trilogy. It's actually pretty good. I'm amazed that they haven't already made it into a young adult thing where someone has to choose between two sexy people.
Two sexy tripods.
Yeah. So, how can I choose between these two sexy tripods? For years, this is a weird thing. I read those very young. I was like 9 or 10 years old. For years, when I heard people talking about War of the Worlds, I thought they were talking about the Tripod Trilogy.
That's weird.
Because people would be like, well, the War of the Worlds is like these aliens from Mars and their tripod machines show up. And I was like, oh, I read a bunch of books about tripod machines. I know what's going on. And then they have to rebel, right? Like the humans rebel? Yeah, they do. They absolutely rebel. And then eventually the aliens die because they can't exist in our atmosphere. Oh, I have definitely read those. They're called the Tripod Trilogy. And people are like, no, I think you read a derivative ripoff. And I'm like, yeah, probably. It was good, though.
Yeah, so there you go. There's that. Was there any other dumb shit in this movie that we really needed to cover?
I mean, I guess we probably... We have a lot of post-apocalypse tropes in this movie that were fun to talk about. How is there corn growing on Catalina Island? Who did that?
Who was... Because Thomas wakes up and fucking Vince is already peeling corn.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and fresh corn that has just grown.
Well, Thomas gets gut shot in the final scenes of the film, and Teresa heroically sacrifices herself by throwing Thomas onto a helicopter, and then she stands on the building and the two of them exchange a long, loving look before the building collapses underneath her. A whole, I'd say, 3 minutes where she probably could have just jumped onto the helicopter, but instead she was like, nah, I'm good. I'm going to wait for this building to collapse.
I'm not injured, but I'm just going to chill here.
Yeah, it's
fine. I'm not even going to try and jump.
I don't want to live on your weird corn island.
No, thank you. I'll die here.
Yeah. So, but then he wakes up and we're like, he must have been unconscious for like a year.
Because this entire safe haven is fully set up. Like, there's structures everywhere. Everyone's got their own shit. They've been here for long enough for there to have been corn that has grown to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Another magic question would be, what the hell was Giancarlo Esposito, or Jorge, before they found him, presumably in the second movie? Because he is an accomplished airship pilot.
Well, I mean, he can fly it, but then again, this is one of those ships that's, like, got a big button that just says fly on it.
Idiot-proof Air Force machine.
Yeah.
I mean, he's flying it 5 feet away from a collapsing building at one point in this film. He is a master pilot of these crazy things, and all we know about him is that he drives Jeeps.
Well, I mean, as far as I can tell, I assume he was a survivalist of the post-apocalypse before he found Brenda, took in Brenda, and then they found these guys in the second movie at some point.
That's about all we can
I can gather. And that Brenda got bit, they used Thomas's blood as an infusion, and then she became immune because of Thomas's blood.
Yeah, so Tom, all you really need to do to make people immune to the zombie plague is...
That was the other thing I was gonna say.
Why are we making cures if his blood is already won?
Well, the big thing for me is, okay, you're stealing kids and putting them in maze because you want to get antibodies out of them. That means you already know that certain ones of these kids are immune, and you put them in this maze to do that. Why didn't you take them while you were wiping their memory and putting them in a maze? Just a blood sample?
Just a quick
blood sample?
Just blood tests. I mean, it's not like they were born in the maze as far as we can tell. By the way, they
were put there.
They all forget their old lives when they go in the maze because it's scarier, I guess, if they have no idea what's going on. I don't think that's true.
I think it's because then they'll be more likely to run through the maze, I guess.
Because I feel like if you took someone, separated them from their family and life, and threw them in a giant robo maze, I'd be more scared because I'd have something to lose.
Well, that's why you wouldn't run through the maze, I guess.
But you have to run through the maze. If you don't run through the maze, then, like, robot spiders eat you or something.
No, the whole first movie is there's, like, an entire camp in the area outside the maze where they're just living because no one is brave enough to go into the maze until Thomas shows up.
Hmm. Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, you'd think that someone with a heroic name like Frypan would probably make that jump.
No, man, he's the cook. It's like having it, like, yeah, this is our big hero, Beans McGee.
So hang on, you're saying Frypan's the cook. What does that make Galley, who is literally named after the kitchen on a ship?
Is he the camp girl? He's the camp asshole.
Well, he's the camp asshole, that's for sure, but is he also the camp girl and his name is just a shortened for, or long elongated form of Gal?
No. You see, he's actually the shortened form of Gallywicks.
Ah, yes, of
he's
course.
He's the camp goblin.
He's the trade prince.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. In shortened and in longened and I can't speak right now, John.
It's good. It's real good.
I think I might be done.
It's possible. Okay, let's do our best and worst then. Give me your favorite thing in this dumbass movie.
The first action scene is really fun. It's
that train heist.
Yeah, it's well done with cool stunts and jumping off of cars and interesting helicopter escapes and stuff. I mean, it does have the problem where the villains in this movie cannot hit.
Well, no,
they're like fighting 15 soldiers on open ground. Like, they're not even taking cover or anything, and no one is hitting anyone.
Yeah, I like one soldier gets shot by them, and you're like, wow, everyone is a bad shot here.
Yeah, this is a bunch of terrible shots. But otherwise, it's a fun scene with good music. I actually found myself drawn into the opening scene. I was like, because before the movie started, I was leaning over to John like, I don't care in the slightest. Because I was trying to rationalize to myself why I wasn't going to be angry at the three old people sitting behind me who were having a full voice conversation the entire film.
You want to take that as your least favorite, that is?
No.
The people behind you?
I've got least favorite. I mean, ultimately, I always like to report on the theater experience when it comes to doing an
interview. It's weird to
now.
Me, because I feel like
I have
every
bad
time
luck.
We go, you come out of it and you're like, oh, there was someone behind me who was just having a full voice conversation. I'm like, I was two chairs away and I heard nothing.
I know. It's I think I'm naturally, because of the attention deficit and the hyper, you know, I have no memory. I have very short attention span. Part of it is that I am easily sensory overloaded by being in a theater. I hate movie theaters.
Yeah.
I always go see movies in them, but I hate them because all I can hear is like, all I can do is see cell phones. All I can do is hear people crinkling plastic. It's all, everything. I cannot just lose myself in the movie. Instead, I'm sitting there going, all right, the person three seats behind me and two to the left is definitely unfolding an emergency blanket made of a thin tin foil. I don't know why he's doing that, but that's definitely what's happening because no one would need to crinkle plastic that long for any other reason. Someone in front of me in three seats to the right is turning on their cell phone and they're attempting to lower the brightness. Oh, no, they're not. Oh, okay. All right. I'm reading the shit on their phone now. That's what's happening. The whole time. That's me in a movie theater. I cannot just look at the screen.
That's sad. That's very sad for you.
So my movie report. In this movie, everyone near me had plastic shit.
Good.
Just constant plastic. This is why I am perfectly fine with banning home food from movie theaters.
Good.
Because movie theater food that you buy there shouldn't be in a crinkly plastic fucking thing. But there's always some guy who's like, I'll put one over on them. I'll bring in a giant plastic bag full of individually wrapped lifesavers.
There's some guy who's just like, I've got 15 layers of tinfoil on this roast.
I hate them so much. So, anyway.
There you go. Your best was the train.
The train scene. You?
My favorite thing in this is honestly going to be the tunnel scene, because it's the moment where I realize zombies were in this movie, and I'm like, what the fuck is actually happening?
Oh my god, it's a zombie film.
Yeah, once I realized they just took all these genres and slammed them together, I was like, now I'm interested, because I have no idea what to expect.
I think the other favorite for me is the Wilhelm scream that was in this
movie. Oh yeah, there was a Wilhelm, and I was like, hey, John!
Hey, John, Wilhelm!
Hey! Look.
So... We both looked over like excited for the Wilhelm. Why would we be that? They're in every friggin' movie.
I know. It was great though.
Yeah.
Least favorite thing in the movie.
I'm going to say that I just didn't like zombie physics in this movie. They don't make any kind of sense.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah. It always takes me out of the film when it's like, these zombies have been standing in here for months. And I'm like, oh, okay, how come they didn't collapse from muscle failure?
Yeah.
Is it because of magic? No? Then you need a reason. Otherwise, if zombies can stand around without drinking water for months on end, they should replace us. They are our genetic superiors.
Yes. True.
It's true. If zombies are better at us than being alive, I say bring on the zombies.
That's what I say.
That's just the next stage in human evolution. It's fine. John,
great.
Least favorite?
Least favorite thing in this is definitely the people from the Burbs blowing up buildings. Because I was like,
this doesn't make any sense.
This makes zero sense. I don't understand what's going on here. This is just because you had no other ending, isn't it? You're like, oh, and then the people from the Burbs get in, and then as they blow everything up, fuck it, I don't care. We want to make it so that there's no reason that anyone comes back to this city.
I would say another least favorite for me is probably the dim-witted single-mindedness of the main character.
Meh.
Where he just only wants to rescue Minho, and all this other shit happening in the world around him is sort of just window dressing.
Oh, that's young adult to me, though.
Yeah.
Your main stupid protagonist is like, I have a thing I need to do, and
it's
it
like,
does
oh,
not matter.
It's ludicrously dangerous, and you shouldn't do it because you're going to kill like 17 of us to do it.
Yeah,
that's fine.
You're going to save one person, and it will kill so many others.
Yeah. I just wanted a scene in this movie. It would not have been a least favorite of mine. It would have been a favorite of mine if during the big romantic scene with Teresa at the very end where he's gut shot and they're like about to kiss, if he was just like, where's Minho? Hey, you seen Minho around?
Hey, I hope Minho's okay.
That Minho, pretty hot, right?
Hey, huh? You ever seen Minho with his shirt off?
Oh my god.
Damn.
Just wanted that. That would have made the movie a top one for me.
So we're gonna give our rating on this movie. 0 to 5 for each of us gives us the rating out of 10. Jeff.
You always make me go first. Why don't you go first?
I know. I do make you go first. I'm gonna give this a 3. No, I'm gonna give it a 2.5. 3 is the level where I'm like, I might actually say this is a decent movie. 2.5 is it's watchable.
I want to say 2.5 as well, because I feel like if I said 3, then I would need to justify that by going and seeing the other two Maze Runner movies, and I'm not gonna.
Like, I honestly kind of want to see the first Maze Runner. The second movie I do not care about, but I want to see what's going on in this maze. That's all. I want to know the death traps, because knowing that the maze is just there to collect fucking like antibodies, I want to see how deadly it is and be even angrier at this stupid company.
It was all like crushing wall things.
Oh, that was the other thing we didn't mention. There's a fucking company called Wicked. I don't care if that's the acronym for your dumb company. There's no way. I don't care if the acronym for my company is EVL.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call it that because I don't want to be like, oh, we're Evil Corps.
Mm-hmm. We make extraordinarily long vehicles. We call ourselves extraordinary vehicle lengths.
Yeah, and we're evil. Please join us.
Hang on, let's fix this.
Wait a minute.
What could Wicked even stand for? Women, Children, Kids Department.
Wichita County, Kansas Department.
We care about killing dogs.
And that's why they're Wicked.
That's what it is. I would find that an evil organization.
No, it's just the company that put on a lot of productions of Wicked.
So many that they lost the I.
Yeah.
It used to be I Wicked.
Because they kept going, look, there is no I in Wicked.
Yeah, Wicked's a stupid name for a company. It's too stupid.
It's too stupid. Stupid evil names for companies and things. God damn it.
Yeah.
Stop it. Okay, there we go. So there we have it. A 5 out of 10, a perfectly reasonable movie that you could ostensibly see.
Hey, here's the thing. When this movie's on FXX in like 3 years, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, you'll put it on. You'll be like, huh, these people are shooting at other people and explosions are happening. Is this a Michael Bay film? Who could tell?
Wow, they sure have to edit the word shit out a lot.
So there you go. Thank you so much for listening to our very weird and rambly review of mostly the tropes that went into The Death Cure. And we will be back in a couple weeks with another movie mastery. You can go to the website, check us out at systemmasterypodcast.com, and you can find our poll for what we will see in theaters next time. February is a slightly better month.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Hopefully they want to send us to see that Black Panther.
Hopefully that's what they want,
yeah.
But I don't know.
I mean, I'm going to see it anyway.
So, yeah, go ahead, go on there, just go to the Movie Mastery tab. There will be the In Theaters Now, and that is the button you will press to get to that, and you can vote on what we will see for February.
Yeah, we'll also link it in the Twitter and whatever, at least once.
Yeah.
So that people will know and we'll get more votes.
And also, if you want to give us a movie recommendation for our standard show,
go to Reddit.
You can go to the reddit.com/systemmastery. We got our big list down there.
Yeah, just put your recommendations right there.
And of course, if you want to get in touch with us for any other reason, why, but you can go on Facebook, Twitter. We are systemmastery@gmail.com. There are so many ways to get a hold of us.
Heck, we even have a Discord. You can find it on the Twitter link that we have.
And if you like what you hear, you want to support us, you want to give us a little something, then you can go to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/systemmastery. And if you donate at all, we are very happy, but a $1 donation gets you our bonus content for System Mastery. $2 gets you that, plus the bonus content for Expanded Universe or Expounded Universe.
There you go. It's called Expanded Expounded Universe, the Expounded or Situation Universe.
Yes. And at some point, maybe we'll come up with something to do with Movie Mastery, but who knows?
Ah, whatever. We'll figure it. If there's one thing people want from us, it's even more podcasts.
It's yet more content. You want to listen to us ramble yet more. So if you want to support us, it helps us do all of the things that you like us doing, which is mostly rambling and staying alive. So you can go to Patreon to do that. But other than that, you have a good one, and we will see you in 2 weeks.